And welcome back to Three Guys in a White Coat, the podcast where we share our insights on the path to becoming a medical student. As always, I'm Mike Bernazzani, and I'm here with Matt. Matt, you want to say hi?
Yep. How's it going, guys?
And Semler, you want to say hi real quick?
Oh, that's right.
You know, we have a hard time getting all three of us here.
Yeah, we've been not doing our best. But today we are joined by Amari. Amari is a medical student with us, a fellow M2. And he is a great guy. How are you doing today, Amari?
I'm doing great.
Great. So
great guy, doing great. What's up?
So once again, like we like to say,
the disclaimer.
Yeah, right, just cool. You know, again, this is just our advice, our personal advice. This is not you need to do this and this and this if you want to be a medical student. This is just our and our classmates retrospectively looking back at things that we think we did well, things we may have wished we would have done, but
yeah. They're not rules, again, as always. They're just things to get you guys thinking about what you can do to prepare for this process, all right? So with that, let's jump right into this. So Amari, you want to tell us a little bit about, you know, where you're from, where you went to school, all that kind of stuff, just general background?
Cool. Yeah, I went to undergrad at the University of Chicago, which is the one school I wanted to go to for most of high school.
Okay, cool.
I didn't really, yeah. So I'm first generation college student from my family. None of us really went to college, but I had a cool teacher that went there. And I was like, oh, that guy's weird and he's funny, so I'm going to go there too.
Those are the best reasons.
Yeah. So I'm from the Chicago suburbs, Melrose Park, and just born in Chicago and raised in the west suburbs. And I went to undergrad at the University of Chicago.
Great. What was your undergrad major?
I majored in biology, and then I almost double majored, but I ended up doing a minor in comparative race and ethnic studies.
Oh, okay. Great.
We haven't had that one yet.
I was going to say, that's definitely going to give you some cool perspective.
What made you want to go for that? Like the comparative studies part?
So I think it was just constantly, so I was initially on board with the pre-med track, and then I really went away from it for a while because it was just like, I really enjoyed the lab components. But the lecture, being in a room with like 300 people over and over multiple times a week, it didn't work for me.
Gotcha.
So I found some CREST classes. That's the abbreviation for comparative race and ethnic studies. Okay. I found some CREST courses that I really liked, and I just started, I'm Mexican, so started learning about Mexican history, took a lot of classes learning more about like Brazilian history. And I just found that stuff is very interesting because I love science. It's like my passion, but okay. I felt like a once in a lifetime opportunity to get a huge background into a bunch of different like Latino cultures that I identify closely with, but I didn't really know too much about.
Okay. So
really cool.
You didn't like go in with that like idea. It was you went to school, you wanted to be pre-med, and then you found those courses and you were just like, you know, I really identify with this. I want to learn some more about it, and just like kind of ran with it.
Yeah. So I went to school and I wasn't 100% set on being pre-med, but okay. I had an advisor and he's like, well, if you're at all thinking about it, let's just get you started. Cause sure. it's a long trek. And then he's like, and if you don't want to do it, you still have time to start a lot of the other the shorter treks.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. So you said like, you know, you had that one teacher in high school that kind of, you know, inspired you to go to University of Chicago. Was there anyone, you know, growing up that inspired you to look at medicine as a future career?
You know, I always said I wanted to be a dentist.
Okay.
Like, it was like people's, like, childhood job. You ask a kid, what do you want to be? And they just have that, like, instinct response. They don't know where they got it.
Astronaut.
Yeah. I'm going to be the moon.
Right, yeah.
Like, something like that, you know? But I said dentist for so long, and I just kept saying it, and I never thought about it. And then I think in, like, late middle school or early high school, I was like, why am I saying dentist? I think it would be really cool now. Like, I think it's like you do these cool procedures, you get to work with patients, but I'd never had any experiences that made me want to do that.
Okay.
So I kind of went into undergrad as like, well, I hope I can get a job after this. I really wasn't sure like what I was doing.
Okay, cool.
Yeah.
So when you went into undergrad, you said that you kind of talked to the advisor about potentially thinking about that the pre-med track. I mean, I guess how did that start for you? So like what kind of things did you start lining up initially to get yourself prepared for what they thought was a good way to approach the medicine career?
So it just immediately started with me taking like chemistry classes and biology classes, just year long classes with labs.
Yeah.
And I was more or less just on a track. And then I would have time and it's like, oh, you can take a fourth class. And there wasn't a fourth science class. So that's where initially it was taking Latin, and I was like, oh, forget pre-med, I'm going to go classics. And that lasted all of like 12 or 15 weeks, and then I was I really don't want to do that. So it was kind of like I was taking the pre-med track, and then I was using the elective time to figure out, like, well, what else am I interested in?
Uh-huh.
That's nice.
And the pre-med was sort of in the background because most of those classes were year-long commitments.
Right.
Yeah.
And luckily, I was on the quarter system, so I got to take a lot of different classes.
That's
What's a quarter system versus, like, I was a semester-based, but I never really understood, like, what quarters versus, like, how the semester process worked.
Yeah, quarters are more just seasonal. So in the fall, you have a quarter. In the winter, you have a quarter. In the spring, you have a quarter. And then the summer quarter is generally optional, or students will take it to fill some other prereqs.
So would your courses like span two quarters, or did you like you had new set of classes like every quarter?
So the science classes, like the pre-med, chem, and o-chem, those would generally go three quarters a whole year long.
Oh, okay.
But a lot of the, we had like an intro to bio course at the end of my first year. That was the very, just those 12 weeks, including the final and stuff.
Okay. Gotcha.
And on the note of the course that you were taking for like the pre-med track, all that, a lot of times people will say, you know, like, I don't think I want to go to medical school anymore. I hate these classes. Looking back on like when you had to take like cell bio and like genetics and all that, what do you think about that now? Do you think that it really mattered if you like truly enjoyed it at that point? Or do you look at it as like just like a hurdle you had to get over to get to where we are now?
So I love natural history.
Okay.
That's like one of my like hobbies. I like just learning about a weird animal that I didn't know about before, or just learning about the history of, I don't know, studying cells. Like I really enjoy that stuff. So I'd say I always enjoyed taking those science classes.
Yeah.
What I didn't enjoy was the pre-med culture was so, I felt like it was toxic. Mm-hmm. People were so competitive. And I think what would have made it easier for me would be if more people were just like a little more collaborative, like the med school collaborative spirit, if that was more reflected in the pre-med culture.
Like in the pre-med years and all that.
Yeah, I felt like that would have been a lot better because, I mean, you're all shooting for the same goal. You're not directly competing with each other. I don't know. I just feel like if it was a little more collaborative, it would have been more enjoyable. I would have been a little more gung-ho about it.
Uh-huh.
Gotcha. Yeah. I mean, because like, we've talked about that with other people, Socha, and even myself and you, Mike, how we kind of found ourselves straying away from the pre-med people in the group.
Well, I was the opposite on that part.
Oh, sorry. Yeah, you were the different one. Yeah. But it's and again, it's nothing against those people, but sometimes it's just nicer not to have your friend group only revolve around medicine. Did you find that your friend group was made of pre-meds, or was it like not like exclusively not pre-meds or anything like that?
So it was a bit of a mix. I'd say my closest friends were like my roommates, and they were mostly not pre-med. We had an economist, a math major, a philosophy major, and then a biology major.
Okay.
So it was good to be able to hang with a core group that wasn't at, you know, pre-meds are rightfully stressed out because you have an extra 4 to 8 hours of lab work
that
for your classes. Yeah, in addition to like things that you feel you have to volunteer for, hopefully you're volunteering because you like love the thing.
Yeah,
but perfect. Thank you for saying that.
But if you're trying to check all these boxes, you're going to get overwhelmed. So I get why people get really stressed out about it.
Yeah.
But it's kind of nice to be able to, you know, take a step back and say like, well, why am I doing all these things?
For sure. And like from what it sounds like, you said that, you know, you were taking your pre-med as a foundation, but then you also were able to explore and find things that you were like really, really enjoying learning about. Kind of like you said, the Crest classes and stuff.
Yeah.
How do you think that that helped shape you? I mean, like what in the end made you want to do a medical career versus, you know, pursuing a master's, PhD in like Latin history?
So there was a period of time where I was sort of considering not pursuing medicine. It was pretty much the end of college. I was like, well, I'm not going to do that.
Mm-hmm.
And I was going to work in Chicago Public Schools for a while. And then I started doing a lot of field work, just like paleontology, primatology field work through connections I'd made through undergrad. And I kind of had put medicine off the table for a bit.
Okay.
And it was, I started med school 4 years after I graduated undergrad. So I had a few gap years.
Right.
Okay.
And what brought me back was I started interpreting at a clinic in Chicago, community health. And I mostly started interpreting because, I mean, I was like, I want to give something back directly to my community.
Sure.
And working with Latinos in Chicago, that's me. So I found that place and it was just like very little training. And then I felt like when I was interpreting for a lot of the physicians there, I really liked what I was doing. And I felt like I was actually helping people, mm-hmm. but I wanted just a little more dynamic role. So I was like, for me, I want to just cut out the middleman. I don't want to be the interpreter. I want to be the other person.
Yeah.
Yeah, you want to be the action, the effector, and the, you know, be able to deliver that message.
So too. I'd say that pushed me over. But that was a few years after undergrad. So I'd done a few other jobs, and that kind of just like, well, let's try this and see if it works.
Yeah, that's great.
So with that, you know, you said you had like 4 years of a gap year and all that. So when did you graduate college, and then like, just to get like a timeline down for like the listeners, you graduated when, and then you matriculate when?
So I graduated in 14, okay. And I started med school in 2018.
Okay. Great. Yeah.
So I had 4 years, and in those years I was like, I had so many jobs. I ranged from like, I was teaching cooking classes at one point to like kids in Chicago. And I was working with monkeys at another point. I was tutoring for a company and private tutoring. I had like
tutoring sciences, or
I was tutoring sciences, and I was doing some test prep tutoring. And then on the side, I was doing some algebra tutoring, and I worked in a paleontology lab for a while. So it was just like a bunch of random jobs. Oh, I took an, I also like volunteered as an interpreter, which was great for my development. Highly recommend it. If you speak Spanish and you're interested in medicine, just find a community that you can interpret with.
Yeah. I mean, that's a huge thing, because I mean, that's so, I don't know. I always find it surprising at how well, more languages can help you communicate. I mean, cause you know what I mean? We took these medical Spanish classes, and then all of a sudden, you know, we're able to say even little phrases, and we kind of build a toolbox of Spanish words that help us get our point across.
Yeah. We've talked about that a few times, I think, but even when like, so I worked in a clinic for 2 years before I came here, and even when I would walk into a room and like, all I had taken was high school Spanish at that point. And even just saying hello and like your name in like the person's language, they just look at you like, oh, thank God.
Yeah, you just like shatter a barrier right immediately. It's the tension goes down. So,
all of those experience, you know, you just talked about you did paleontology, you worked with monkeys, you were tutoring, you were doing all this stuff. So now you've finished, you're done with all this stuff. You're getting ready to apply. How did you pick what you wanted to put on the AMCAS application? Were you able to put all of it? Did you have like an overflow?
Yeah. So they had 15 boxes, I felt like, on the application. And it's like
three most meaningful with that.
Three most meaningful. And then it was like 15 that you just write stuff about. I think I just put everything on a sheet of paper, and I everything I could remember that I'd participated in.
Uh-huh.
Now in med school, I'm being proactive, and I'm adding things to a sheet as I go along. So nice. I don't have to actually try to remember.
Yeah.
But I just tried to remember anything I'd done. And then I'd just written a few sentences about each of them to be like, at one point, like, I'm going to have to pick some of these. So if it comes easy and I can write about it, then I'll add it to the application.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
And the more meaningful ones that I chose, I think were ones that were directly associated with medicine. So I think I chose working as an interpreter. But I think I also chose some of the scientific field work I'd done, because mm-hmm. that was a time when I really didn't know what I wanted to do, but I came back to medicine, and I thought that was powerful. I think I wrote about one of my three, I chose working in a primates lab, because I was exploring like something I was really interested in.
Uh-huh.
But then at the same time, it gave me the time to really think, well, what actually do I want to do long term?
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it sounds like through some of your experiences in those gap years, you were able to explore things that you were interested in, but then, you know, still felt like there was a hole that you wanted, like,
to do more.
So like when you said, like when you were an interpreter, you enjoyed being in the clinic and being able to help, but you wanted to also be able to do this and help be the clinician that enacted the change.
Yeah. I remember there being a few instances where I wanted to counsel the patient about something, but I was like, well, that's totally inappropriate because I don't have the training. But
yeah.
I felt like in some cases, and the providers, you know, they do the best job they can, but they were seeing a ton of patients, and they might not, if you're not from a Hispanic background, you might not have the same cultural competence. So you might not view people, and when you're talking about diet, you might not know exactly the kinds of foods they are eating. So you'll say generic things that you might be eating. And there was a few times where I wanted to steer the conversation a certain way, but I couldn't because that's inappropriate. I didn't have the training.
Yeah.
So I was like, well, if I get the training, what is it? Like just 4, 5, 8 years.
Real quick thing.
Yeah, just really quickly get the training, and then I'll come back and I'll just do the other side of the job.
Gotcha.
So I'm curious now. So you've been out for 4 years, and now you're doing the AMCAS application. How are you learning to do all this stuff? Are you looking it up on your own? Do you have someone that was kind of like guiding you? You know, you've been working in a clinic. Is like a physician from there mentoring you? Like, what was your process for like figuring out the path?
I felt like every step where I was like, because I was, my initial plan was I was going to take more gap years.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
I was like, well, I'll just apply to med school when I'm like 29 or 30.
Okay.
And to put it in context, I'm 27 right now. So okay. I was going to wait a little longer.
Cheers.
Yeah. What's up? I was going to wait a little longer because I was like, well, I'm not in a rush and it's a long journey and I have time. I was working with a friend and he was, ultimately he was applying to PA school because he had come from having just done medical school in another country.
Oh,
and
wow.
He had a lot of trouble taking his boards here and he ended up just became really disillusioned with the process. Mm-hmm. And he pushed me and he said, dude, why are you waiting? And we were at that time, I was working in a doctor's office and he just kind of pushed me into like thinking, well, why am I waiting a little extra?
Yeah.
Cause initially I'd taken the gap years cause I really didn't know what I wanted to do.
Uh-huh.
Sure.
But then there was a point in those gap years where I was like, I'm going to do medicine. It's just a matter of when.
Gotcha.
And I think that I was lucky to meet him along the way because he kind of like steered me. I felt like I was waiting for no reason. Cause once you make up your mind about it, just do it.
Yeah, right? Exactly.
For sure.
So I think I took the right amount of gap years to get really good experience, but it's different for different people.
For sure. And so just talking about those experiences, it sounds like you were, you know, heavily involved in volunteer work and especially within the community here in Chicago. How long, I mean, like when did you start volunteering and getting into those roles?
I've always been a tutor in some capacity since like eighth grade.
Yeah.
It's just a matter of tutoring a family member, tutoring a neighbor. I've been doing that for a long time. So it's just something that I've kind of naturally done. Mm-hmm. And then at the beginning of college, I remember first quarter, I took 4 classes and that was pretty busy. And then I took 3 classes second quarter because I was like, well, let's see what the difference is.
Sure.
I had so much time. So I got a job. I started working with ESL students in the Hyde Park community of Chicago.
Mm-hmm.
I just started signing up for things because I felt like I needed to fill the time.
Okay.
But I wasn't, at that point, I didn't really have a plan. I started working in a lab, but I didn't do it because I wanted to go to med school. I just did it because I was like, well, I have extra time. I got to start working. I have extra time. I got to start volunteering. So
gotcha.
I kind of just filled in my time naturally.
Kind of like what they talk to us about here when they're like, you know, in first year, they're like, you know, you don't really feel like you have as much to do right now, but you guys will find ways to fill up this space. It kind of sounds like that was going on for you. You found that you had time. You didn't want to sit around and be bored and do nothing. So you were just like, well, let's just go do these things. I'm interested in these things. I like these things. Let's explore it more.
Yeah.
So do you think the passion was driving you into those more than anything else?
Yeah, I think the passion for those like individual things. And medicine's great because the reason I started tutoring ESL students was because I had experience as a tutor and I wanted to work with Spanish-speaking people.
Yeah.
Okay. So at the time, I felt like that was a really good way that I could do that. And then like moving forward in medicine now, it's just like, well, I know I want to keep working with Spanish speaking people. I know I want to improve my medical Spanish. So
sure.
I'm still working as a tutor, but I'm also working as a mentor with high school students here. And I find that if you put things on your calendar far enough in advance, you just make the time for them.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Don't double book yourself and you make the time for
them. Yeah.
Right. And you're a medical Spanish teacher here, right? For fellow classmates?
Yeah. I taught med Spanish last year. I might do a few guest lectures this year if they need it, but I'm not sure yet.
Gotcha. Yeah. Well, I mean, that's great because like one of the things that we try and impart to our listeners is that, you know, find things that you're actually passionate about. Don't just do things. Don't sign up for things because, you know, you feel like you want to check the box. I volunteered. Check. You know, like because those experiences are generally things you don't enjoy or you end up not enjoying or, you know, people think that they need to volunteer within the medical realm, like they need to go work at an ER and stuff. And so it's nice to hear about your experience, you know, just being like, this is who I am. This is like part of my upbringing, my culture. I want to help people in that same role.
Yeah. I'd say most of the things that I had in my MCAS, like 15 boxes, were not medically related.
That's great.
A couple of them were because at one point in my gap years, I interpreted. At another point, I took an EMT basic class.
Yeah.
But most of the things were just things I'd done along the way. There were still a lot of community service, like mentoring or like tutoring, but definitely I wouldn't say that it was all medical things. I didn't even join the pre-medical interest group, or I even forget what it's called,
yeah,
the health group at my undergrad. Uh-huh. I didn't join them because I wasn't as interested at that time.
Yeah. Okay.
In retrospect, maybe a good idea, but I didn't do it.
Yeah, but like that's the thing is like you felt like you wanted to explore other options and to like build. I guess what we like to think of is you know,
well rounded almost.
We talked to Christina and she was very big on developing your own brand.
Yeah,
and branding yourself and figuring out what that means to you and who you are and being able to define yourself outside of medicine so that you can bring your perspective and your backgrounds of that brand into life as a physician.
Completely agree.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So one of the things that people are always asking about is like research. Like how do I find research, all that. So you've talked about some of the things that you've done. Can we talk a little bit more about some of the research that you've been into and, you know, how you found those options? Did you cold call them, cold email? Did you know someone?
Yeah, because you said you jumped into a lab.
Yeah, I jumped into a couple labs actually. So the first lab I jumped into, I just looked at like the campus hiring. I didn't know at the time that you should do research or you should be published. I was just like, well, I need a job.
Yeah.
Did you end up getting published?
I got a fellowship out of it, and then I got a poster presentation and an abstract. So I got a couple things, but I initially started working there as a job. And then, I mean, I think a lot of labs, especially if that topic interests you, that was a MRSA lab. So it was pretty cool. Microbiology.
Yeah.
I stayed there for a while because, I mean, first of all, I was getting paid, which was really cool. But then eventually I was there long enough to where they just viewed me as part of the team. And when an opportunity for a fellowship came along,
boom,
my old lab manager was like, hey, maybe you should apply for this. And then I was like, all right, let's see what happens. So I applied for it. And then they ended up working really closely with me. I got a mentor in that lab and we just worked together on a research project, which was really cool. And then I kind of just fell into other labs.
Yeah.
If you have a professor that's teaching a class that you like, just go to their office one day. I went to a professor's office and he ended up saying, hey, I work with monkeys in Puerto Rico. Are you interested? I was like, well, yeah, let's go. So I ended up going. I got a little bit of funding and I went for 2 months. And that was really cool experience. It was field work. And then I ended up, the last lab I worked with is the paleontology lab at UChicago. I was just taking a class, dinosaur science, because someone that I'd met in Puerto Rico, he was a field scientist working on his PhD, he said, before you leave that university, you need to take this dinosaur science class. And I was like, well, I like dinosaurs.
Yeah, those are pretty cool.
Yeah, so I took this class, and there was a field trip after, so it was part of the class. You go to Wyoming, and then I just worked like heck while I was out there, and then I'm just friends with the paleontologist now, so he invites me on things. So I've worked really closely with his lab, whether it's out in the field or in the lab curating things. So I think the best way to get involved with the lab, you can definitely apply. That's how I got my first lab job. But also, if you're taking a class by someone, very good chance if you're at a research institution, they're doing research.
Yeah.
Email them, stop by their office, see what they're up to. Maybe you can volunteer in their lab. Maybe you can get a job.
That's great advice. So how did dinosaur anatomy compare to when you took anatomy here?
We're just looking at bones,
yeah,
which is a little bit easier than like, well, now you got to look at all this flesh,
nerve trees, and flesh muscles.
And that's a nerve that's gone forever now, you know.
And it looks just like an artery.
Yeah, no. So I think it's a totally different animal. Literally.
Yeah, I was gonna say
it's a totally different animal figuratively. But I mean, it's cool. I felt like I had some bone basics.
Yeah,
I'm not sure how test relevant just knowing some bones is, but you know, it's a good start.
Yeah. Well, so I mean, you've talked a lot about. I mean, you have some really cool experience working with primates in Puerto Rico. You know, digging up bones up in Wyoming, and then also, you know, your experience interpreting as for clinicians. What do you think was your most meaningful experience, and maybe the one that jumped off of a page to someone reading your application?
So I think that the personal statement is something I spent a lot of time on.
Yeah.
I figured at that point in the application, I was like, I'm applying this cycle. So the MCAT score that I'll get is the one I'm going to apply with. Mm-hmm. And I was taking that in the future, like some months after I was working on the personal statement. But I felt like the personal statement was something I had a lot of time to develop and I had a lot of people look at it.
Great.
And I wrote about just an amalgamation of all my different experiences, but I spent I remember spending a lot of time on that personal statement because I figured that's one thing I could change, and that's one thing that wasn't set in stone. You know, by the time you're applying, you can't go back and change your GPA unless you're going to like do a post-bac, which is definitely an option for you.
Uh-huh.
The MCAT, I wanted to take that test once. By the end of it, my brain was fried. I didn't remember if I had clicked submit or if I had clicked delete. I was like, well, let's just hope I get a score.
Yeah.
But I spent a lot of time on my personal statement, and I think it was pretty good. I mean, I'm in med school now,
but yeah.
I feel like that's the one thing that I tried to come from a genuine place. I talked a little bit about my family at the beginning because that's like I come from a huge family. There's like within a 10-mile radius of here, maybe 100 of us.
Oh, wow.
Like there's a lot of us.
Yeah, you've always got family parties going on or something.
It's constant, man. So I tried to touch on that while I tried to just paint a picture of my journey. And my journey was very much like I was kind of interested in medicine, and then I kind of felt like I was doing a 180, but I was still pursuing cool things along the way.
Uh-huh.
And then I wrote about a critical experience that I had while shadowing in the emergency room.
Yeah.
Kind of brought me back.
What was that experience?
So I mentioned earlier I was taking an EMTB class. Because once I started interpreting, I felt like, oh, this is cool. Let me see what else. So I took an EMT class actually here at Loyola.
Oh, wow.
And that was kind of my intro to medicine because, I mean, I'd worked at a research lab, but I'd never really worked with patients. I'd taken all of these pre-med courses, but they never really talked to you about like the human body very much. It's kind of all in abstract or really molecular, really cellular.
Yeah.
So I took this EMT class just to see, like, am I actually interested? And part of the class here is you shadow a couple days in the firehouse and then a couple days in the ER. Mm-hmm. And I felt like the 2 days that I was working just like 8-hour shifts in the ER, and I say working, I was just shadowing. I that is what pulled me in because I felt like there was so much going on. I was only working with one nurse that day, mm-hmm. and then whatever patients she was seeing, I was seeing. But I just felt like I was getting snippets in these like patient histories and the reasons they were there. And without going into too much detail,
uh-huh.
there was one trauma case where I saw the whole staff pretty much unite, and everyone had their piece. I mean, there was like a doctor kind of like overseeing the process. There was different people using the bag valve mask. There was different people. There was just like, it was like, I felt 10 or 12 people for this, trying to save this one person's life. And the fact that it all came together, and I mean, I wasn't there for multiple days, but by the end of the shift, the guy was still breathing. And there was multiple points where his SpO2 was just dropping.
Wow.
Yeah. So, and it was a heroin overdose.
Okay.
And I felt like it was something where there was all these people going as out of their way as much as they could to save this person's life. And the person wasn't entirely conscious, so they had no idea. You know? So I felt like seeing that and being a part of that, I was like, oh my God, I want to do this.
Yeah.
I could see myself in a lot of the different roles in this room.
If you described it like that at all in the personal statement, that makes a lot of sense as to why people picked it up. Because you just described it so vividly, and it just like grabbed my attention. I was just like, I need to pay attention to this. Like, what happens? But I agree with you. I remember, so I also took an EMTB class, and the big switch for me was when I was on the truck, I hated it. But when I was in the ER, they also made us do a shift overnight in the
Same.
ER. And it was so cool. Like, I mean, I saw this guy, he stitched up someone's hand. We had to take care of someone that was like brought in for intoxication. Another person was doing something else, and just watching him like coordinate everyone in that area and like everyone coming together was just kind of like, this is pretty sweet.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I think it's great just to be like able to, I mean, and obviously we talk a lot about how you find a bunch of different experiences, make sure you have a diverse profile, but sometimes it is those medical ones that really let you know that that's the home. That's the future that I want.
And the one thing too, that you were just talking about that we've kind of touched upon is in that whole story, you didn't like upplay your role. You know, we talk a lot about how like
I was an observer.
Yeah.
Right. But we were talking about how like we feel like a lot of times people feel like they need to be able to say like, I saved someone's life. I put the tourniquet on their leg and saved them. And it that's not what it has to be. You know, you were observing and you were just witnessing and like witnessing the beauty of how that all came together. And that was like your realization. And I think that's the perfect way to do it. Then try to upplay it and be like, I got my hands in there and I put the O2 stent on the finger and I did this. Like, it's not about us. It's about the person that was in the bed. And that's like what you focused on the entire time you talked about it.
Yeah. So I think that's really cool. And again, like an important way to get those messages across is through the writing and the description, because like Mike said, like when you were describing it, we felt like we were there. And I think that's so important. Just Mike likes to push, take a writing class, make sure you can put that stuff on paper.
But, yeah.
The one thing I want to cycle back to is you said that you took a lot of time to like write your personal statement, which is good because I feel like a lot of people just only focus on the MCAT and then they take it and then they try and do everything else in between when they get their score or and when they took it. So describe your process. And like you said, you had a lot of people look at it. Did you have family members? Were they professors, mentors?
Yeah, so I was doing a self-study for the MCAT, and you can only do so much of that. And I was doing it over the course of like, I don't know, 5 or 6 months or something. Yeah. And I started the personal statement just loosely thinking my ideas before that, pretty much when I decided I wanted to apply to med school. And I think I was just kind of working on it between studying for the test. Cause again, if you study and then you reach a point where you're like, I really don't want to look at this anymore. Mm-hmm. It's not even that it's challenging. It's just that there's so much information, so much teaching your brain to think a certain way.
Yeah.
And I think I was doing the personal statement a lot of chunks in between. I remember having a lot of my former like peers look at it. I had a couple friends that were in med school look at it.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not entirely sure if I had, I don't think I had any, I hope I'm not like forgetting someone, but I had my family look at it for sure. But I don't think I had any physicians look at it because I didn't really know any physicians.
Sure.
No, I did have at least one physician look at it, and I didn't like his feedback. So I was like, well, ignoring that completely, because, I definitely had one physician. I was working in a doctor's office at the time, and I printed out a copy, and I was like, hey, do you mind looking at this? And I don't know, maybe he was busy, but for me, that document was huge. I was like, I felt like I'd poured my soul out into it. And then he was kind of like, oh, you might not want to talk about this at all. And I definitely like included his perspective while I was editing it. But I think it's also important to get a lot of people's perspective, but make it yours. It's absolutely your voice. You can't just, I disagreed with him, so I didn't really tweak it too much based on what he said. But I had a lot of other people that weren't physicians, weren't in medicine, give me advice. And I was like, oh, I like that. Let me find more of that in me. Or like, is there another part of that story that I want to share? And I kind of use that instead of just directly having someone say like, hey, make all these changes and then make them cool. It's done.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I mean, and we agree because we cycle back between each one of us had a different experience, either having too many people read it and then you feel like there's no way you can conglomerate everybody's opinions, or, you know, having nobody look at it and it just being based off of what you think and like whether or not you can get across what you say. So it looks like you found a good balance.
Yeah.
Yeah. And you stated the most important part, you know, this is your time to shine. As weird as we talk about that, it is to talk about yourself and not like, you don't want to be like boastful, but like you do have to talk yourself up to a degree. And at that point, it's just like someone can give you some advice, but at the end of the day, it's your piece of work. So whatever you want it to be is what it should be.
Yeah.
Yeah, definitely.
Great. So one of the things that is always an interesting tiptoe around for the AMCAS application is letters of recommendation. You know, we try and give a little bit of advice on how to go about asking those, who are good people to ask, you know, for letters of recommendation. How did that part of the process go for you?
So I think I was lucky in that I wasn't necessarily thinking about med school the whole time that I was in undergrad, definitely at the beginning, but I was just, I established good relationships with my professors because I would just hang out sometimes. I would go to their office, and then it just turned out that you needed like 2 science professors' applications. Well, I had worked for 2 of them in their labs. Like it was doing field work, so it wasn't always directly one-on-one.
Yeah.
But I'd worked with them and then updated them about their work. So I felt like they kind of knew me as a person. And then I needed one from like a non-teacher like person, I guess.
Uh-huh.
And I'd fortunately applied for a fellowship through the Mercer Lab that I'd worked in. And I had a mentor, and he was very happy to write me a letter of recommendation.
Great.
And then at the time I was working in a doctor's office. So I just asked the medical director there. I mean, I think I was just close with these people. So
yeah.
They were people that I didn't view them as someone that I needed along the path until I started like putting it all together and seeing, okay, what boxes do I have to check?
Yeah.
But I feel like I had a holistic enough journey, or I was just being myself with enough people to where when I had to get letters of recommendation,
they were there.
Yeah, they were there. And then the last one, he was a grad student at the time when I took his class, and he was a professor at the time when I was applying for medical school. And I remember one time I had a meeting with him, and we were just like talking about basketball, talking about the Bulls. But I feel like having like talked to him in a class context, but then talking to him not out of a class context. And then I saw him we were doing a rally on the south side of Chicago for a trauma center when there wasn't one at the time.
Oh yeah.
And he was very involved with that. And I was involved with that. And I wasn't necessarily, when I was involved, I wasn't like, I'm going to go to med school after this rally. No, I was like, I was there because that issue was important to me.
Yeah.
But then that person was there. So when I reached out to him, I was able to say, hey, I'm this person. I took your class X amount of years ago. I took your class and we had this meeting, and then we both participated in this one thing, and those things were all really meaningful for my development. And then I just in that same message, would you feel comfortable writing me a letter of recommendation? And I think I did that with enough people where I just, you know, I embraced the relationship with those people along the way. And then when I needed the letter of rec, they were all there. So.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's such a good mindset. Like, I wish like we could all have that, to where like we knew we wanted to do medicine, but then like completely just like, you know, throw that in a way you're not thinking about that. Cause I mean, you think about motive all the time, and it sounds like, you know, you just hung out with people because that's who you are. You know, you're great at developing relationships. It was never a point to an end. It was never like, I need to hang out with you because you're going to write me a letter. I need to, you know, like, so I love that. I love that aspect.
I feel like that's when it becomes like what you were just saying, when you're hanging out with people to be like, oh, like I'm going to need this person to write me a letter and this person to write me a letter. Those letters don't come off as genuine. It sounds like, you know, you, without even thinking about it, nurtured these relationships to the point where you had invested so much in these people just out of pure desire that when it came time for you to get those letter of recommendations, they were like, I remember Amari. We went and did this. Yeah, this guy's a cool guy. I like him. We got along, versus having to go back and like talk to someone that you really didn't have any kind of connection with and be like, I have no idea if you remember me. Like, can you do this for me? A lot of people miss that. I feel like when you have like a mentoring ability, or you're trying to get like a letter of rec from someone, there's a portion of that you have to nurture yourself to grow it into to a point where it can become a letter of rec or some kind of reference for anything in life, even outside of medical school.
Yeah. I mean, because like you said, you guys were chanting the same things at the rally, probably, you know, it's just kind of having that commonality and just being able to see each other outside of the classroom professional aspect so they can actually see your character. So,
and one thing on your letters of rec that's different from what I had to do. So you didn't have like a pre-med committee that was like putting your stuff together and putting it into the AMCAS portal for you. You had to like get all these letters yourself and then get them into AMCAS somehow.
So I was applying to med school and I didn't meet all the deadlines for the pre-med like group at my undergrad institution.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Because I decided I wanted to apply a little bit after when they had their like mandatory meetings and stuff.
Yeah, gotcha. And they're strict on those.
They're
things.
Very strict. So I wasn't able to use them. So I didn't have like their compiled letter where they often, I guess, compile letters of recommendation and then you get a letter of recommendation.
Like a committee letter?
Yeah. I didn't get that, but they were still able to compile them for me to where I never saw any of the letters of rec, and I was able to tell people writing me letters if you could send it through here.
Okay.
So they did still send it.
So you had a committee packet.
Yeah. I had a committee packet without the committee letter.
Right.
Gotcha.
So yeah. You can also totally get into med school without a committee letter. It's definitely possible. It probably helps. Yeah.
That's cool for you to say that, because I remember we had the same process at Northeastern that, you know, you had to meet these deadlines, do these things, get your letters in by this time. And I remember like freaking out, like, One of my letters got like dropped at, like, the last minute, and I needed another one to fill it like real quick. Otherwise, I wasn't gonna get the committee letter, and I'd be like, "Oh my god, my world's about to end! Like, what am I gonna do?" But it's nice to know that had that happened, you know, you can just do the packet, and it doesn't seem like it had any impact.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not sure how it impacted me. It's really hard to say if I would have like interviewed way more or something, or if I would have had another like a bunch of offers. I don't know, but I'm here. I'm happy. It's working out.
Yeah.
It probably helps if you can meet the deadlines, give it a shot. Yeah. But sometimes life happens. For it. Yeah. I wasn't ready to. I decided I was going to apply sometime in December of the before I was applying. So I guess 13.
Yeah.
No. Pardon
Wait.
Me. 17?
Yeah.
When did we start school?
Yeah. I honestly December don't even know what year it is right now.
December of 2017, I was like, all right, I'm going to do this. And then I immediately started looking up what I have to do, what are the boxes I have to check. And I looked at my like health from my undergrad's prerequisites, and they're like, you need to attend this thing today. And I was like, how am I going to go? I just said I want to do this today. I was like, don't, I can't. And every time I missed one of those deadlines, I was like, oh, it's over. It's over.
Yeah.
But, you know, I missed more than one deadline. And again, I don't recommend it. If you can make a deadline, make that deadline.
Yeah.
But my life, I wasn't applying at a convenient, I hadn't been thinking about it for a long time. I had very much been in the mentality of, for a while, like, oh, I'll apply later. I'm going to get to it.
Yeah.
When I decided, like, why wait? When I had a friend tell me, like, hey, just go for it. I decided to just start putting things together one by one. And one of those was missing their application deadlines. But that's okay. Because, you know, life doesn't revolve around the med school application. Sometimes you just got to piece it together.
Yeah, for sure.
To do your own things.
Yeah. So, I mean, looking holistically back at the application and your process with it, what is one thing that you think you did extremely well throughout the process, like something that, like, you know, you're very happy with, and then something, like, looking back on whether it's deadlines or not, that you think you would have liked to do better had you had another run at it?
This is a long question.
One thing that you did well, one thing that you did poorly.
One thing I did well, I think in the application for like the 15 things or whatever, filling in those boxes, I had a list of things that I wanted to write about. And then I spent two of them just writing about stuff that interested me. Like, I spent one writing about drinking tea, and it was like 300 words. It wasn't very long. But I've been drinking tea for a while, and I like knowing about its history. So
you
I
got
just
a
wrote
cup of tea right here.
I am drinking a cup of tea right here. Yeah. And I just felt like I was like, well, this is part of me, and this is part something I'm actually interested in. So I wrote one of those things about drinking tea, and I actually talked about it in one of the interviews. And I was, while I was talking about it, I was like, well, I'm screwed now. This person's obviously not interested to hear about what I have to say about chai. So I think that, I mean, I don't know if that's a good thing, but I think having some part of your application that's not directly medicine, that's like, hey, I'm a person too, and yes, I have these volunteer commitments and these medical commitments, but there's a few things that I'm just that make me a person.
Yeah.
And I think that was one of them.
I think that's one of the biggest. I mean, I think that probably helped you more than you think, because everyone can be a med student. Everybody can have this, you know, GPA or whatever. Everyone can have all this pre-med stuff. But you know what? When they're reading through all those applications and they go, this dude likes tea? Yeah. Like, what's up with that? Like, that's great. I mean, I talked one time about one of my friends who's now in med school. He really likes Spikeball, so he wrote about Spikeball on one of those applications, and so I think it just sets you apart.
Yeah, and then just in the vein of one more thing I did well, I think that I did my gap years well. Like, I wasn't planning on them.
That was my next
question. I wasn't going into like, okay, now I'm gonna finish college and I'm gonna have 3 to 4 gap years. And this year
are you Dr.
do
Simmons
this
right now?
Yeah,
but I'm saying it wasn't planned, but it was meaningful because I was signing myself up for stuff that interested me, and I was when I was doing it, I was doing the hell out of it. So I wasn't just like, oh, this is a cruddy like full time job. Like, no, you're at a job. I had pride in my work, and I worked hard, and I feel like that ended up giving me a really good relationship with my medical director.
Heck yeah!
So when I needed a letter of rec, just working for him for 2 or 3 months, he had already had a good sense of who I was.
Awesome.
So. One thing I want to talk about with your gap years, I'm gonna skip my usual question. I'm gonna do a different question. I know we talked a lot about like the things you did in your gap years to get to medical school. What are some of the fun things that you did during that time? Like, how else did you make use of that time? Did you go on any cool trips? Anything that like that you look back on and you're like, wow, if I had gone straight in right after school, I wouldn't have been able to do this with like my friends or something.
Yeah, so I think one of the biggest things that probably derailed, not derailed, but just changed the track of the things I was doing. I was going to work in Chicago Public Schools with this mentoring program.
Yeah.
But then I got an opportunity to go on an expedition with the paleontologist I had worked with as a part of the class. And the expedition was an expedition to Alaska, the Arctic Circle. I was like, whoa, this is cool. But it was during the like orientation for the tutoring job that I was going to take. And I tried to work with them and I said like, hey, is it okay if I miss like like a critical 3 weeks of this program? And they were like, no, you can't.
So then we have a deadline.
Yeah, we have a deadline. My arch nemesis. No, so then I said, you know, I'm just going to try this because it sounds like a once in a lifetime opportunity. So I went there and then that was really cool. I found some dinosaur bones in the Arctic Circle, like way up north. And I lived off of a river for a while. That was pretty cool. And then from there, I kind of had to piece together because I had this expectation that college would kind of get me ready for a job, which it didn't. Well, now you know how to think. Think about how to support yourself.
Yeah, also, here's Texas. Yeah.
I was like, oh, man. So then I just started, I reached out to former professors that I'd worked with and like just I was like, hey, can I volunteer for your thing for a while? And then that turned into a job. And I mean, it just, for me, it worked out. So the gap years, what was the question?
It was just like fun things that you did you look back at that you may not
you
have
lived
been able
your life.
To.
Yeah, know? No, like you didn't do things that you felt like you had to do. You lived your life. That's awesome.
I started biking in between in my gap years. Like I got like pretty into it, and that's like a cool thing that I don't know if I'd gone straight through if I would have ever been like, oh, I'm gonna learn about the like the intricacies of just like cycling and you know fixing my own bike and upgrading it and stuff. I probably wouldn't have done that because I would have been busier.
Yeah,
I learned how to play guitar in my gap years. Nice. I had no musical talent except for whistling. I'm not gonna whistle into the mic, but that was mic whistling. But yeah, I was really into whistling since like kindergarten, but I never picked up an instrument. So I taught myself to play guitar 6 months after I finished undergrad.
Yes.
I've been playing for a few years now, and I really like doing that. I think if I'd gone straight through and I didn't know an instrument, I probably wouldn't have learned a new one.
Yeah,
because I would have just, you know, just done the school stuff. So I think I developed a little bit of travel just with the groups I was working with. Got to live in Puerto Rico for a year. That was really cool, working with monkeys. It started as volunteer, but then it turned into a job. I lived on the East Coast for a while, for a couple years, which was really cool. I met a lot of people that I keep up with. And these things are things I wouldn't have done because I would have been, you know, in school.
Yeah, doing what we're doing now.
Yeah, doing what we're doing now.
Yeah, and I mean, I think this probably goes without saying, but those things probably contributed to who you are today. Like, the person that you were when you came out of college is not the same person that you were after those four gap years, probably, right?
Yeah, definitely not.
Yeah. Yeah, because I think that's one of the things is a lot of people feel super pressured to go straight from college into, you know, the med school. They think if they don't do that, then they're failing by some means. But, you know, I think we're finding that gap years are more and more common. And not to say that anything's wrong with going straight through, but those gap years help you develop who you are, develop interests, guitar, you know, cycling, tea. Well, you like tea all the time, but, you know, like that kind of stuff. And sometimes those kinds of things can actually make you a much better, not only applicant, but physician someday later in life.
Yeah, I sure hope so. And I just, if you're going to do a gap year, I think it's cool if it's planned too. Like if you're thinking, I am going to take 1 to 2 gap years and I'm going to work in this lab and then I'm going to apply to med school. But just be really open to those gap years. Like kind of to a certain extent, let them take you where they're going to take you. Because if it turns out that you love something you're doing there, just pause there for a little bit. See what it has to offer. And I think I did that for a few years. And then when I was ready, when I was like, well, I'm pretty sure I want to go into medicine.
Yeah.
And I had someone kind of push me that way. I just went straight into it and I just felt like, well, what do I have to do next? What do I have to do next?
Yeah.
But definitely just if you're going to gap year, great, excellent, do it. But just be very open to whatever you're doing. Yeah, like embrace it. Don't just check that box. Embrace it and see what else there is to do in that time.
That's some great advice.
Heck yeah.
DeYoung, we're getting pretty close to the end of this. Do you have any last burning questions that you want to get in?
I do. I want to ask your favorite question.
You want to ask mine?
All right. I do.
You can take it this time. I'll let you have it.
So one thing that we always like to talk about, because I don't know, I feel like there's always like one weird one, but during your interview process, what was your favorite or weirdest question that you were asked?
What's the one you would hang on the wall? It was like a fish that you caught.
I should probably remember. I think that, like, I definitely got the question, like, why here? Like, that question.
Sure.
I think the one question that caught me by surprise, which is not even a hard question, it's like, what are you reading right now? Like,
yeah.
I wasn't, like, we were in a conversation. I'm not sure how she worded it, but it's like, hey, what are you reading? Or, like, what's the last thing you read? And I'd been so immersed with the application process and then interviewing, and I was like, I was just so taken aback. Like, I was just thinking, like, what do I have on my nightstand? What did I read on the flight here? And I was thinking, and I think what I'd read was, I'd read a comic book on the way over, because I really just wanted something. I love comics, first of all, but I wanted something a little more chill at the time. And I think when I told the person I was interviewing, I'd just gone on a diatribe about tea. And she's like, hey, what are you reading? And I was like, oh, this book with all these pictures. I was like, afterwards, I was like, oh, man, that didn't help.
The ones that say pow. Yeah.
But no, we talked about comics for a while, and she didn't necessarily share my enthusiasm, but I think it was a different response than she had
either anticipated.
Yeah.
Sure.
Because she was like, is this guy not trying right now?
Yeah, it's like,
does he already have like four acceptances for fun?
Yeah. No, I think that's good because, like, I mean, again, they're trying to see who you are as a person. If you're getting to an interview stage, that means they like you on paper. They just want to get to know you as a person then. So, you know, if you go in there saying, I'm reading all of these medical books about how to be a physician for, you know, great if you do that and that's your happiness, but like, don't fake that. Yeah. Like, if you're reading comics, heck yeah. If you want to read, you know, a magazine, tell them, you know,
anything you're doing at that point, like, even if it's comics, like, I know my buddy Josh, he loves Marvel and he'll read all of those things and he knows all the intricacies of them, what each person does, how they got their powers, like, blah, blah, blah. And it's just like, even though like that's not medically relevant, it shows that you have a general interest in something and that if it piques your interest, you have the ability to learn and remember it and to like dive further in. So I don't really think it matters what you pick. It's a matter of how you spin it and how you talk about it.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
I think when she asked me the question, I was like, should I pick some really cool book I've read in the past? But my brain just kept saying, like, dude, she asked you what you're reading. All you're reading is these comic books. So I was like, all right, well, time to be honest.
Yeah. I think be honest and be able to, not spin, but, like, just be honest with what you're doing and why it's important to you.
Yeah.
Great. Well, Amari, this has been awesome. Thank you so much.
Thanks for having me. Why did you guys have me wear a suit? I'm wearing a full like tuxedo right now, and you guys are very casual. You know, this is weird.
You're the only one that's actually asked us why we make people do that.
Yeah. I mean,
why do I have to wear a suit? Were you surprised
if we showed up in a tank top and like shorts?
Yeah. Are you sweaty? Like I'm
in a bathrobe. Nah. I mean, you know, again,
you look great.
You look good. Thanks. The bow tie. You know, purple polka dots. Good stuff. Well,
Amari, you know, the one thing we always try to like summarize like what the talk has been about at the end of it. And the one thing that I've written down from what we've talked about today is that from you, what I've gotten is like, you know, do what you enjoy. Don't do it to check the box. Let your passion kind of drive where you go. If that kind of stalls you in applying to medical school, that's fine. If it takes you those experiences to get to that point, don't be afraid to let that happen. But you've been a wealth of information for the people that have been listening today. We really appreciate you coming on. We really appreciate you coming to school to talk with us on a weekend. And have you ever heard the way that we sign out?
No, haven't.
Okay, so it's very, very simple. By the time it circles around to you, you will 100% know what to do. So just follow us, okay? All right. So guys, this has been another episode of Three Guys in a White Coat. Thanks for listening. This is Mike signing off.
This is Matt signing off.
And this is Amari signing off.
Thanks for listening, you guys. Have a great rest of your day. Thank you.